This week, France gives in to pressure and says it will leave Niger, pulling its ambassador and its troops from the West African country. Some are celebrating the move. What is behind the anti-French sentiment sweeping across parts of West Africa? And what does this mean for the future of France's influence and ties in the region? Straight Talk Africa starts now. Hello there and welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from VOA's headquarters in Washington. I'm Heidi Adams. Thank you so much for joining us. A spate of coups in West Africa and growing anti-French sentiment. France appears to be facing a reckoning in the region, and the West is worried about the future of their presence in these parts of the African continent and their relationships with countries, especially those that were once French colonies. Some West African leaders are concerned the region will see more coups, military takeovers, and more instability as countries there face a tough battle against jihadist insurgents in the Sahel. But some analysts say one factor fanning the tensions and threatening stability in West Africa is the spread of disinformation. And joining me here in studio is Philip Obadi Jr. He's a Nigerian journalist and is currently a fellow with the International Center for Journalists here in Washington. Philip, a warm welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's so great to have you here. You've heard it, our topic today. Given that theme, can you give us some insight into the role that disinformation is playing in these developments that we're seeing in West Africa right now?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, it's something that we're all very concerned about, particularly we journalists will, you know, try to cover the news and then tell what the stories that are true. I live in Nigeria, and you know, we had an election, a presidential election in March, and we saw how much disinformation targeted at the major candidates, you know, actually did sway some voters. We want to see elections carried out free, fair, and credible. But the problem that we see across the continent, not just in Nigeria, not just in Anglophone Africa, but more so in Francophone Africa, is the fact that, you know, many trolls are creeping up. You know, there are trolls that are actually being backed by Wagner and perhaps the Russian Federation, spreading lots of disinformation. You mentioned Niger. And that's one country where disinformation has really, really eaten into mainstream life. Yeah.
Philip, of course, as you mentioned, this is not just happening in West Africa, not just happening in Francophone Africa, but it's part of what could essentially be seen as a global ecosystem of disinformation. We saw it happen here in the United States as well. In what kind of political environment does disinformation and misinformation thrive? And in what kind of political environment does it not?
Well, if I, you know, take Africa, West Africa, you know, as a clear example, there's lots of political instability across the West African region. Also, same in Central Africa. You have people dealing with big issues with economy not doing so well, poverty rising, and what have you. So when there is growing dissatisfaction in the populace, a lot of people, you know, see the opening, the advantage to begin to spread disinformation. Oftentimes it's for political gains, maybe candidates running for office, and maybe some people not even happy with the ruling party or the government in power. So such environments as we have seen across sub-Saharan Africa, I'm not just going to talk about, you know, West or Central Africa. It's the same across the sub-Saharan Africa. Environments that are very toxic, poverty is rising, economy is not doing so well. There's such environments, you know.
In terms of crisis, in times of you know, difficulty, we saw this during the pandemic as well. Now, of course, Philip, disinformation, its dangers, and how to combat it is a big conversation among journalists. Yeah. You know this, of course, and it should be, right? But is this a conversation that is really just happening amongst journalists? I mean, what about the average member of the public who does not have access to resources, to fact-check everything, to make sure that what they're sharing is true? And how do you really tell the difference? Say, for instance, you're sharing a video, whether what you're sharing is disinformation versus just dissent.
Mm. It's very difficult tackling disinformation, and social media hasn't really helped, because these days the vast majority of Africans, sub-Saharan Africans, actually do depend on social media for news and all information happening in entertainment and politics and what have you. And it's not very easy for people to believe what they see on social media and don't even have, you know, other avenues to fact check. So even for we journalists, it's one of the biggest challenges that we have. You know, I can't say, you know, for sure how, you know, we are going to deal with that, because people really don't have that much access to mainstream media, or don't read that much in terms of going through the more prominent news sites to see exactly what is true. But I often encourage people that when you see maybe a news item shared on social media, just go Google, you know, the more prominent, more, you know, trustworthy news sites, and then try to see if what you have seen on social media is true. But I must admit that it's very, very difficult fighting disinformation.
And Philip, there is the challenge also of money, who can afford the truth these days, because fake news is free.
Of course.
But then, you know, often the truth is behind a paywall. Mm. That is certainly the case in the Western world, here in the United States. Do people encounter similar challenges on the African continent in many countries, where if you want to go to a trusted news source, you have to pay for that?
Luckily for us, we don't have, you know, in Nigeria, for example, I can't think of any prominent news site that's behind a paywall. And I can say the same for many countries in sub-Saharan Africa. I know in a couple of countries you have major news sites, you know, behind paywalls. But that's so much of a Western thing.
I've seen a little bit of that in South Africa as well.
Yeah, South Africa is one country that, you know, was more similar to the West in terms of the way the media is structured.
Right.
But in the rest of sub-Saharan Africa, we were lucky enough not to face that challenge. But the problem is, people are still so focused on what's shared by so-called influencers on social media. And sometimes these influencers, you know, do share misleading content.
Absolutely. I've got one final question for you. And I've read a little bit about the challenges that you encounter as a journalist in the sort of this disinformation landscape that you operate in. Disinformation is essentially your beat, right?
Yeah.
But it's also dangerous work. Tell us a little bit about how you've been targeted by internet trolls and how it's dangerous for you to even go to certain places.
Well, first of all, a lot of my focus in the last 2 years has been reporting on the activities of the Russian Wagner Group in the Central African Republic and in Mali. It's so difficult to actually focus on the Wagner Group without looking at the other aspect of their work, which is disinformation. And they have been spreading a lot of disinformation across the West and Central African regions. You know, not just in the countries where you have boots on ground, countries like Togo, countries like Senegal, the Ivory Coast, Benin, and even in Nigeria, you don't have Wagner mercenaries, you know, physically present, but they have been paying some media outlets, you know, to spread information that is not true, completely false. And because I have done a lot of work exposing these things, you know, I have been warned several times by some internet trolls telling me I will be silenced, I'll be killed if I continue to look into, you know, what the Russians are doing in Western Central Africa.
Certainly dangerous work indeed. Please stay safe as you do this important work. We wish you all the best. Thank you so much for coming in to talk to us, Philip Obadi Jr. We really do appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, still here on Straight Talk Africa, do stay with us. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, France says it will pull its ambassador and troops from Niger. Some in the West African nation say it cannot happen soon enough. What's behind the wave of anti-French sentiment we see in some West African countries? And what now for France's presence and influence in the region? We'll discuss all of that when Straight Talk Africa returns. Thank you so much.
In times of change, When the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in
When a mother dies during childbirth, the future dies with her. That's according to a recent report by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It says across the globe, approximately 800 women die each day during childbirth. The chance of a baby reaching their first birthday drops to less than 37% when the mother dies during childbirth, especially for women of African descent. On the next edition of Our Voices, we take a closer look at the maternal and infant mortality rate. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
We take note of it, but we remain vigilant and mobilized. That's why we think the mobilization must continue. It must be continuous. There is no need to say to wait until the end of the year for French troops to leave the country. No, they need to leave now in accordance to the accords between the French state and the Nigerian state.
It's a different Africa now. It's now an Africa that has awoken and risen up. It's an Africa that knows what it wants. It's an Africa, a Niger, who takes risks to ensure sovereignty and who wants to plainly affirm its sovereignty, come what may. Thus, there's no other choice. They have to do it. I'm not surprised, but I am truly sorry for France. I really feel disgusted to see France and the French president acting like that. France, which is said to be a state where there is a rule of law, who sets out rules for it? Who behaves in this manner, like a perfect gangsters? It's a sorry sight. I'm really sorry for France.
When they say between now and the end of the year, there is no problem. They have been here for 12 years. They can't leave fast, as many would like to think. We have to give them time to leave. But they will be wiped from A to Z. And our fight will remain the same, right until the very last French soldier leaves.
Residents there from Niger's capital of Niamey expressing their opinion about France's presence in and departure from their country. Now, after weeks of protests and political pressure, France says it will now pull its ambassador and around 1,500 troops from Niger. The move comes amid a wave of anti-French sentiment and multiple coups in the region. David Doyle has more.
France will pull its 1,500 soldiers out of Niger by the end of the year, French President Emmanuel Macron said on Sunday. That's after the West African country's July coup. It's a huge blow to former colonial power France's influence as well as counter-insurgency operations in the Sahel region.
It will be organized over time, in the weeks to come. But it is the end of this cooperation because we are not here to participate in political life, to be hostages in some way to the putschists.
These soldiers, when will they return?
They will return in an orderly manner in the coming weeks and months. And there we will consult with the putschists because we want it to happen peacefully.
The move comes after weeks of pressure from Niger's junta and anti-French demonstrations. It will likely exacerbate Western concerns over Russia's expanding influence in Africa. The mercenary force Wagner is already present in neighbouring Mali following coups there. Until the military takeover, Niger had been a key security partner of France and the United States. They had used it as a base to fight insurgents linked to Al-Qaeda and Islamic State in the Sahel. Macron has refused to recognise the junta's authority and says he still regards President Mohamed Bazoum, currently held prisoner by the coup leaders, as Niger's legitimate leader. He has, he said, informed Bazoum of France's decision.
And that was David Doyle of Reuters reporting there. So why is France so unpopular these days across parts of West Africa? And what does the future of French relations and influence in the region look like? My guests are Nyaka Lagoke. He's an assistant professor of history and Pan-Africana studies at Lincoln University in the U.S. state of Pennsylvania. But he joins us from Detroit, Michigan today. And also with us is Babacar Ndiaye. He's a senior fellow at Timbuktu Institute in Dakar, Senegal. Nyaka and Babacar, warm welcome to both of you. I do want to start out with the man who is no stranger to the show, Nyaka. We saw the French military kicked out of Burkina Faso earlier this year, and then, of course, they ended their military presence in Mali in August last year. And now this announcement that they are to leave Niger, all following coups in these countries. We've seen celebrations on the street, and the mere idea and sight of the French leaving. Now, when we see and hear this term anti-French sentiment, tell us, what does that encompass? Is that what we are seeing here, an anti-French sentiment?
Thank you very much for the opportunity. By the way, I'm here in Flint, and thanks to a friend of mine, Steve. So, you know, he's the one who allowed me to be here with you. The first thing that we need to know is that there is an awakening in Africa, and then we are in the context of the revival of an Africa. The leaders of Africa, at the UN, all of them have spoken about the French. We put French among all the colonizers of Africa, leading to one that wants to be that
We seem to have some audio problems there with you, Nyaka. We'll see if we can get that fixed. I'm going to go to Babacar in the meantime. Babacar, it's been reported that France's departure from these countries does leave a hole in efforts to counter a decade-long Islamist insurgency in the region. Who's now going to fill that gap? And, you know, have the French really shown success in their military efforts in the Sahel?
That's indeed a deep blow to the French and international community assistance to Sahelian regions to curb insurgents. France was actually one of the leading Western partners, not only training, funding, but also in participating in operations. Since they were kicked out of Mali, where they intervened with Barkhane and were able to stop the advance of terrorist movements in Bamako. Now in Niger, it's going to be leave a huge gap, because apart from for France, only the U.S. was present, but the U.S. were not involved in operations directly supporting the Nigerian army in fighting underground the jihadist groups and preventing them from moving to the Gulf country. So it's going to be a huge gap. It's going to completely put in disarray all the strategy that was put in place by the West to support the West African, the regional countries that are very weak in facing the challenge. So it's going to be a huge gap. I don't know whether the U.S. are going to stay with their military bases in Agadez. But in any case, the U.S. was not participating directly in the operation. They were providing intelligence and support and training. So it's going to be it's an amazing change, a geopolitical change in the response against jihadism in the sub-region. It's really, really a very tough question to see now with the developments with ECOWAS whereby the three countries established now an alliance that is directed against ECOWAS and even in France, is going to fragment more the regional and sub-regional efforts to tackle the jihadist threat in the sub-region, in the Sahel and beyond the Sahel, in the West African region in general.
I don't know if we can go back to Niake Babacar. I'm going to continue with you in the meantime and put this question to you. I mean, you just laid out that there's going to be a gap for sure, and one that will affect other Western powers in the region as well. But what do the countries in question here, Mali, Burkina Faso and Niger, what do they gain by the French leaving, and what do they lose by the French leaving? And this is beyond military losses and gains.
Absolutely. This is really the big question, because the three weak countries getting into alliance, whereby with the support of the UN, United States, France, and the EU, they were a difficulty to really stem the jihadist threat. With this new vacuum, with Mali trying to get new alliances, especially with Russia and the Wagner Group, I don't think that will be enough in terms of resources, in terms of capacities, and in funding to face the challenge. So there is a new dynamic there. There are questions about how the alliance is going to find funding for their operations. Resources, military, political, diplomatic, to address the issue. And the other, worse than that, is the dividing. There was a G5 group that was supported by EU and the West that put together five countries, including Chad, which is the major actor in the fight, which has resources, which has experience, and he would get results on the ground. Now the G5 is going to be dismantled, and now you have the G3.
Right.
G3 versus G5. This is going to be completely disorganizing all the strategies by the countries, by ECOWAS, and by the international community. I don't know whether these groups already have a clear plan and how, because it's clearly Russia is the only alternative opportunity knocking.
Absolutely.
But I don't think Russia is going to have the resources, the engagement, and the capacity really on the ground, because they're sending a few troops in Mali protecting the regime. But would they be able to deliver in fighting terrorism and jihadism in Sahel and beyond? I don't believe so, for now.
Nyaka, I want to bring you in here. One big part of the debate is that on the one hand, and we've seen this in Mali, Burkina Faso and Niger, where people say they want an end to imperialism and so therefore France should go, fine and well. But at the same time, we also hear people say, but we want Russia to come in and replace, or they're praising the Wagner Group. Isn't that just kicking one imperialist power out and then inviting another in?
I am going to be brief on that. The most important thing, Africa wants to be free, and they want to ask the people to support the region. In the history of Africa, Russia, China, Cuba, India, all the support of the United States, and today they will rely on the two countries for the fight for the supremacy.
We still seem to have some audio problems with you there, Nyaka. I'm so sorry. Babacar, what kind of rethinking is needed in the region here, militarily, diplomatically speaking, not just for the French, but for other Western nations?
I think this military coup in Niger came as a surprise for the whole international community and deals a fatal blow, I think, a deadly blow, I would say, in all this strategy, and brings about a major geopolitical change, changing alliances, a fragmentation of the alliance, breaking down the strategy that was put in place. At the same time, the most concerning development for me, in my view, is the dismantling of ECOWAS unity by the establishment of three military juntas alliance that is directed against ECOWAS. ECOWAS was marginalized in the fight against terrorism because of lack of its military resources, but it at least it set the framework for coordinating international efforts, both militarily, politically, and from the organizational point of view. Now it's a new, actually, it's a Pandora's box open. And I think both the governments, international partners, need to act very fast and thinking about a new strategy, including the African Union. But the dynamic that provides now lack of trust within the ECOWAS member state, whereby these three countries kind of breaking away, so to speak, from ECOWAS. ECOWAS itself is at the litmus test of its credibility and of its survival. I don't know, and the option they wanted in solving the military coup in Niger is almost set to fail. I don't think now the military threat is going to materialize and that President Bazoum, the democratically elected president, could be restored in power. And this is draws a blow to ECOWAS efforts for, in the last 30 years, establish legal frameworks, provisions, and the architecture that would put good governance, constitutional rule, and human rights at the heart of the conflict prevention mechanism. ECOWAS provisions allow them to intervene, for example, to avoid anti-constitutional change in government, i.e. military coups. With this military coup, there is now a new wave of authoritarianism that is taking place in the West African sub-region, backsliding democratic efforts that was slowly and patiently built over the 30 years. It seems that we're coming to end of a historical cycle where democracy...
Babacar, I want to ask you just a final question, excuse me, before we go. Is there a generational aspect to this as well, where people are tired, frustrated, they want change badly, and it really doesn't matter how that change comes about, whether elections or through coups or military takeovers, it doesn't matter. But is that, for young people, does it matter less that it's an election? We've got about just over a minute.
Exactly. You touch a really deep underlying issue, which is the disenchantment, dissatisfaction with the youth, with democracy as proposed. Whereas actually it's dysfunctional democracy, because the hope was democracy would have free and fair elections, good governance, transparency, rule of law. However, the system that were put in place generally were most of countries flawed, with elections rigged, accountability not always in place. And the worst of thing is economic progress not also there. So you have inequalities in development and poverty spreading around. Youth bulge and the growing youth that is more committed to participation with the use of digital means of participation and organization, they are upset, impatient, and mobilized. And they're exactly so. They're going to throw the baby with the bathwater. It's not democracy that is at question, but it's dysfunctional democracy as it's implemented by most of the countries. And therefore, they think the military is an alternative. But the military is never an alternative. You have to work in democracy governance, fix elections, improve rule of law, fight corruption and social inequalities. And that's the way. But now what we're seeing is they reject democracy as its dysfunctional aspects was seen in West Africa. And the wave of authoritarianism also is worldwide. So they're seeing other models like Russia, China, illiberal democracy that provide provide development. And they think those countries could be used as a model again versus the West. So it's
and
also
there goes the bathwater, right? The baby and the bathwater. Babacar Ndiaye, we have to end it there, unfortunately. But this is an ongoing conversation, and we'll have you back on the show. Thank you so much for your time. And that is our show today. Thank you to all my guests and all our affiliate stations across the African continent. Do be sure to follow us on social media. Thank you for always watching and for always listening. From all of us here in Washington, we'll see you next time. Goodbye.